Chapter 13. Maggard. Factions. Lunar Wolves. Princeps Turnit listened intently as the orders came through, though Kassar couldn't hear the orders piped into the Princeps' ear, and he didn't want to. It was all he could do to keep from vomiting. Every time he let his mind wander outside the systems of the Dies Irae, he saw nothing but the tangles of charred ruins. His consciousness retreated within the machine, pulling his perception back into the massive form of the Titan. The Dies Irae was coming back to life around him. He could sense the god machine's limbs flood with power, and he could feel the weapons reloading. The plasma reactor at its heart was beating in time with his own, a ball of nuclear flame that burned with the Emperor's own righteous strength. Even here, among all this death and horror, the Emperor was with him. The god machine was the instrument of his will, standing firm among the destruction. That thought comforted Kassar and helped him focus. If the Emperor was here, then the Emperor would protect.
"Orders in from the Vengeful Spirit," said Turnit briskly. "Moderati, open fire."
"Open fire," said Arukan.
"Sir, the Istvanians are gone. They're dead."
To Kassar, Arukan's voice sounded distant, for he was subsumed in the systems of the Titan. But he heard Turnit's voice as clearly as if he had spoken in his own ear.
"Not at the Istvanians," replied Turnit. "At the Death Guard."
"Princeps?"
said Arukan.
"Fire on the Death Guard?"
"I am not in the habit of repeating my orders, Moderati," replied Turnit. "And they are to fire on the Death Guard. They have defied the War Master."
Kassar froze. As if there wasn't enough death on Istvan III, now the Dies Irae was to fire on the Death Guard, the very force they had been sent to support.
"Sir," he said, "this doesn't make any sense."
"It doesn't need to," shouted Turnit,
his patience finally at an end.
"Just do as I order."
Looking straight into Turnit's eyes, the truth hit Titus Kassar as though the Emperor had reached out from terror and filled him with the light of truth.
"The Istvanians didn't do this, did they?" he asked.
"The War Master did."
Turnit's face creased in a slow smile, and Kassar saw his hand reaching towards his holstered sidearm. Kassar didn't give him the chance to get there first, and snatched for his own auto-pistol. Both men drew their pistols and fired. Maggard took a step forwards, drawing his golden Curlian blade and unholstering his pistol. His bulk was even more massive than Cinderman remembered, grossly swollen to proportions beyond human and more reminiscent of an Astartes. Had that been Maggard's reward for his services to the War Master? Without wasting words of preamble, Cruz raised his bolter and fired, but Maggard's armor was the equal of Astartes' plate, and the shot simply signaled the beginning of a duel. Cinderman and Mercedes ducked as Maggard's pistol spat fire, the noise appalling as the two warriors ran towards one another with their guns blazing. Keeler watched calmly as Maggard's gunfire blew chunks from Cruz's armor, but before he could fire any more, Cruz was upon him. Cruz smashed his fist into Maggard's midriff, but the silent killer rode the punch and swung his sword for the Astartes' head. Cruz ducked back from the great slash of Maggard's sword, the blade slicing through the armor of the Astartes warrior's stomach. Blood sprayed briefly from the wound, and Cruz dropped to his knees in sudden pain before drawing his combat knife, the blade as long as a mortal warrior's sword. Maggard leapt towards him, and his sword hacked a deep gouge in Cruz's side. Yet more blood spilled from the venerable Astartes' body. Another killing strike slashed towards Cruz, but this time combat knife and Curlian blade met in a shower of fiery sparks. Cruz recovered first and stabbed his blade through the gap between Maggard's greaves. The assassin stumbled backwards, and Cruz rose unsteadily to his feet. The assassin stepped in close and lunged with his sword. Maggard was almost the equal of Cruz in physique and had youth on his side, but even Cinderman could see he was slower, as if his new form was unfamiliar, not yet worn in. Cruz sidestepped a huge arcing strike of Maggard's sword and swung inside his opponent's defense, reaching around to lock his head in the crook of his elbow. His other arm snapped round to plunge the knife into Maggard's throat, but a fist seized Cruz's hand in an iron grip, halting the blade inches from the man's pulsing jugular. Cruz fought to force the blade upwards, but Maggard's newly enhanced strength was the greater, and he began to force the blade to one side. Beads of sweat popped on Cruz's face, and Cinderman knew that this was a struggle he could not win alone. He pushed himself to his feet and ran towards Maggard's fallen pistol, its matte black finish cold and lethal-looking. Though designed for a mortal grip, the pistol still felt absurdly huge in his hands. Cinderman held the heavy pistol outstretched and marched towards the struggling warriors. He couldn't risk a shot from any kind of distance. He was no marksman, and was as likely to hit their deliverer as their killer. He walked up to the fight and placed the muzzle of the pistol directly on the bleeding wound where Cruz had stabbed Maggard. He pulled the trigger, and the recoil of the shot almost shattered his wrist, but the effect of his intervention more than made up for the trauma. Maggard opened his mouth in a silent scream, and his entire body flinched in sudden agony. Maggard's grip on the knife weakened, and, with a roar of anger, Cruz punched it into the base of his opponent's jaw and through the roof of his mouth. Maggard buckled and fell to the side with the force of a falling tree. The golden armored assassin and the Astartes rolled, and Cruz was on top of his enemy, still gripping the knife. Face to face for a moment, Maggard spat a mouthful of blood into Cruz's face. Cruz pushed the knife deeper into Maggard's jaw, plunging it into his opponent's brain. Maggard spasmed, his huge bulk thrashing briefly, and when he stopped, Cruz was looking into a pair of blank, dead eyes. Cruz pushed himself from Maggard's body.
"Face to face," said Cruz,
breathing heavily with the exertion of killing Maggard.
"Not with treachery. From 1,000 miles up. Face to face."
He looked at Cinderman and nodded his thanks. The warrior was wounded and exhausted, but there was a calm serenity to him.
"I remember how it used to be," he said. "We were brothers on Chthonia. Not just among ourselves, but with our enemies too. That was what the Emperor saw in us when he came to the Hives. We were gangs of killers as existed on 1,000 other worlds, but we believed in a code that was more precious than life. That was what he wrought into the Lunar Wolves. I thought that even if none of the rest of us remembered, the War Master would, because he was the one the Emperor chose to lead us."
"No," said Keeler. "You are the last one."
"And when I realized that I just told them what they wanted to hear, I tried to be one of them, and I succeeded. I almost forgot everything, until now."
"The music of the spheres," said Cinderman quietly.
Cruz's eyes focused again on Keeler, and his face hardened.
"I did nothing, half-heard," said Keeler,
answering his unasked question.
"You said so yourself.
The ways of Chthonia were the reason the Emperor chose you and your brothers for the Lunar Wolves. Perhaps it was the Emperor who reminded you."
"I saw this coming for so long. But I let it, because I thought that was my code now. But nothing changed, not really. The enemy just moved from out there to amongst us."
"Look, as profound as this all is, can we get the hell out of here?" asked Mercedy.
Cruz nodded and beckoned them towards the Thunderhawk gunship.
"You're right, Miss Hollerton. Let's get off this ship. It is dead to me now."
"We're with you, Captain," said Cinderman, as he gingerly picked his way over Maggard's body after Cruz. The years seemed to have dropped from him, as if the energy lost in the fight was returning with interest. Cinderman saw a light in his eyes he hadn't seen before. Watching the light of understanding rekindled in Yakton Cruz reminded Cinderman that there was still hope. And there was nothing so dangerous in the galaxy as a little hope. Turnit's shot went high, and Kassar's went wide. Jonah Arukan ducked for cover as the rounds ricocheted on the curved ceiling of the bridge. Turnit rolled down behind the command chair as Kassar pulled himself from his own chair, set deep into the cockpit floor and level with the Titan's eye. Kassar fired again, and sparks showered as the auto-pistol round hit the electronics arrayed around Turnit's chair. Turnit fired back, and Kassar dropped into the cover of the depression formed by his own seat. The connectors had torn free from his scalp as he moved, and tears of blood streaked his face, metallic monofilament wires clinging wetly to the back of his neck. His mind throbbed with the suddenness of being ripped away from the god machine.
"Titus!" yelled Arukin. "What are you doing?"
"Moderati, surrender, or you will die here!" shouted Turnit. "Throw down your weapon and surrender!"
"This is treachery!" shouted Kassar. "Jonah, you know I am right. The Warmaster did this. He brought death to this city to kill the believers!"
Turnit fired blindly from behind the elaborate machinery of the command seat.
"Believe? You would betray your Warmaster because of this religion? Your disease, do you know that? Religion is a sickness, and I should have put you down a long time ago."
Kassar thought rapidly. There was only one way out of the cockpit, the doorway that led into the Titan's dorsal cavity, where the plasma generator was located, along with a detail of engineer crewmen who operated it. He couldn't run, for fear of Turnit shooting him dead as he broke from cover. But the same was true of Turnit. They were both trapped.
"You knew," said Kassar, "about the bombardment."
"Of course I knew. How can you be so ignorant? Don't you even know what's happening on this planet?"
"The Emperor is being betrayed," said Kassar.
"There is no Emperor," shouted Turnit. "He abandoned us. He left the Imperium that men died to conquer for him. He doesn't care. But the Warmaster cares. He conquered this galaxy, and it is his to rule. But there are fools who don't understand that. They are the ones who have forced the Warmaster into this so that he can do what must be done."
Kassar's mind reeled. Turnit had betrayed everything the Emperor had built, and the combat within the command bridge struck Kassar as representative of what was happening in the wider conflict. Turnit rose and fired wildly as he ran for the door, both shots smacking into the bridge wall behind Kassar.
"I won't let you do this!" yelled Kassar, returning fire.
His first shot went wide, but now Princeps Turnit was struggling with the wheel lock of the door. Kassar lined up his shot on Turnit's back.
"Titus, don't do it!" shouted Arukin,
wrenching the Titan's primary motor controls around. The Titan lurched madly, the whole bridge tipping like the deck of a ship in a storm. Kassar was thrown back against the wall, the opportunity to take his shot gone. Turnit hauled the door open, throwing himself from the Titan's bridge and out of Kassar's firing line. Kassar scrambled to his feet again as the Titan rocked upright. A shape moved in front of him, and he almost fired before realizing it was Jonah Arukin.
"Titus, come on," said Arukin. "Don't do this."
"I don't have a choice. This is treachery."
"You don't have to die."
Kassar jerked his head towards the Titan's eye, through which they could still see the Death Guard moving through the death-slick trenches.
"Neither do they. You know I am right, Arukin. You know the Warmaster has betrayed the Imperium. If we have the Dies Irae, then we can do something about it."
Arukin looked from Kassar's face to the gun in his hand.
"It's over, Kassar. Just give this up."
"With me or against me, Jonah," said Kassar levelly. "The Emperor's faithful or his enemy? Your choice."
It had often been said that a space marine knew no fear. Such a statement was not literally true. A space marine could know fear, but he had the training and discipline to deal with it and not let it affect him in battle. Captain Saul Tarvitz was no exception. He had faced storms of gunfire and monstrous aliens and even glimpsed the insane predators of the warp, but when Angron charged, he ran. The Primarch smashed through the ruins like a juggernaut. He bellowed insanely, and with one sweep of his chain axe, carved two loyal world-eaters in two, bringing his offhand axe down to bite through the torso of a third. His traitor world-eaters dived over the rubble, blasting with pistols or stabbing with chain blades.
"Die!"
bellowed Captain Erlen, as the loyalists countercharged, throwing themselves into the enemy as one. Tarvitz was used to Astartes who fought in feints and countercharges, overlapping fields of fire, picking the enemy apart or sweeping through his ranks with grace and precision. The world-eaters did not fight with the perfection of the Emperor's children. They fought with anger and hatred, with brutality and the lust for destruction. And they fought with more hatred than ever before against their own, against the battle brothers they had warred alongside for years. Tarvitz scrambled back from the carnage. World-eaters shouldered past him as they charged at Angron. But the butchered bodies lying around showed what fate awaited them. Tarvitz put his shoulder down and hammered through a ruined wall, sprawling into a courtyard where statues stood scarred and beheaded by the day's earlier battles. He glanced behind him. Thousands of world-eaters were locked in a terrible hurricane of carnage, scrambling to get at one another. At the centre of the bloody hurricane was Angron, massive and terrible, as he laid about him with his axes. Captain Erland crashed down a short distance from him, and the world-eater's eyes flickered over Tarvit's before he rolled onto his back and pulled himself to his feet. Erland's face was torn open, a red mask of blood, with his eyes the only recognizable feature. A pack of world-eaters descended on him, piling him to the ground and working at him as though they were carving up a side of meat. Volleys of bolter shots thudded through the walls, and the battle spilled into the courtyard, world-eaters wrestling with one another and forcing bolters up to fire point-blank or disemboweling their battle-brothers with chain-axes. Tarvitz kicked himself to his feet and ran as a wall collapsed and a dozen traitors surged forward. He threw himself behind a pillar, bolt-shells blasting chunks of marble from it in concussive impacts. The sound of battle followed him, and Tarvitz knew that he had to try and find the Emperor's children. Only with his fellow warriors alongside him could he impose some form of order on this chaotic fight. Tarvitz ran, realizing that gunfire was directed at him from all angles. He charged through the ruins of a grand dining hall and into a cavernous stone-walled kitchen. He kept running and smashed his way through the ruins until he found himself in the streets of the Coral City. A burning gunship streaked overhead and crashed into a building in an orange plume of flame as gunfire stuttered throughout the ruins he had just vacated, and Angron's roaring cut through the din of battle. The magnificent dome of the Precentor's palace rose above the battle, unfolding across the blackened remains of the city. As Tarvitz made his way through the carnage towards his beloved Emperor's children, he promised that if he was to meet his death on this blasted world, then he would meet it amongst his battle brothers, and, in death, defy the hatred the War Master had sown amongst them. Loken watched the sons of Horus landing on the far side of the Siren Hold. His space marines, he couldn't think of them as sons of Horus anymore, were arrayed around the closest tomb spire in a formidable defensive formation. His heavy weapons commanded the Valley of Shrines through which attackers would have to advance, and the tactical marines held hard points of ruins where they would fight on their own terms. But the enemy was not the Istvanian army. They were his brothers.
"I thought they'd bomb us," said Torgadon.
"They should have done," replied Loken. "Something went wrong."
"It'll be Abaddon," said Torgadon. "He must have been itching for a chance to take us on face to face. Horus couldn't have held him back."
"Or Sedire," echoed Loken, distaste in his voice.
The afternoon sun hung in veils between the shadows cast by the walls and the tomb spires.
"I never thought it would end like this, Taric," said Loken. "Maybe storming some alien citadel, or defending Terra, like something from the epic poems, something romantic, something the Remembrancers could get their teeth into. I never thought it could end defending a hole like this against my own battle brothers."
"Yes, but then you always were an idealist."
The sons of Horus were coming down on the far side of the tomb spire across the valley, the optimal point to strike from, and Loken knew that this would be the hardest battle he would ever have to fight.
"We don't have to die here," said Torgadon.
Loken looked at him.
"I know. We can win. We can throw everything we have at them. I'll lead them in from the front, and then there's a chance that..."
"No," said Torgadon. "I mean we don't have to hold them here. We know we can get through the main gates into the city. If we strike for the Precentor's palace, we could link up with the Emperor's children or the World Eaters. Lucius said the warning came from Saul Tarvitz, so they know we are betrayed."
"Saul Tarvitz is on Istvan III?"
asked Loken, sudden hope flaring in his heart.
"Apparently so," nodded Torgadon. "We could help them. Fortify the palace."
Loken looked back across the tangle of shrines and tomb spires.
"You would retreat?"
"I would when there's no chance of victory, and we can fight on better terms elsewhere."
"We'll never have another chance to face them on our own terms, Taric. The Coral City is gone. This whole damn planet is dead. It's about punishing them for their betrayal and the brothers we have lost."
"We all lost brothers here, Garvey. But dying needlessly won't bring them back. I will have my vengeance too, but I'm not throwing away the few warriors I have left in a knee-jerk act of defiance. Think about this, Loken. Really think about why you want to fight them here."
Loken could hear the first bursts of gunfire and knew Torgadden was right. They were still the best trained, most disciplined of the legions, and he knew that if he wanted to fight those who had betrayed him, he had to fight with his head and not his heart.
"You're right, Taric," said Loken. "We should link up with Tarvitz. We need to get organized to launch a counterattack.
We can really make them suffer, Garvey. We can force them into a battle and delay them. If Tarvitz got the warning out here, who's to say there aren't others carrying a warning to Terra? Maybe the other legions already know what's happened. Someone underestimated us. They thought this would be a massacre, but we'll go one better. We'll turn Istvan III into a war."
"Do you think we can?"
"We're the Lunar Wolves, Garvey. We can do anything."
Loken took his friend's hand, accepting the truth of his words. He turned to the squads arrayed behind him, scanning the valley through their gun sights.
"Astartes," he shouted, "you all know what has happened, and I share your pain and outrage. But I need you to focus on what we must now do, and not let passion blind you to the cold facts of war. Bonds of brotherhood have been shattered, and we are no longer the sons of Horus. That name has no meaning for us now. We are once again the Lunar Wolves, soldiers of the Emperor."
A deafening cheer greeted his words as Loken continued.
"We are giving the enemy this position and will break through the gates to strike for the palace. Captain Torgadden and I will take the assault units and lead the spear tip."
Within moments, the newly rechristened Lunar Wolves were ready to move out, Torgadden barking orders to put the assault squads up front. Loken gathered a body of warriors to him, forming a pocket of resistance in the shadow of the tomb spire.
"Kill for the living! And kill for the dead," said Torgadden,
as they prepared to move out.
"Kill for the living,"
replied Loken, as the spear tip, numbering perhaps 2,000 Lunar Wolves, moved out across the tombscape of the Sirenhold towards the massive gates. Loken turned back to the valley, seeing the shapes of Sons of Horus moving towards him. Larger, darker shapes loomed in the distance, grinding the battle-scarred shrines and statues to dust as they went. Rhino APCs, lumbering land raiders, and even the barrel-shaped silhouette of a dreadnought. He felt he should be filled with sadness at the tragedy of fighting his brothers, but there was no sadness. There was only hatred. Arukan's eyes were hollow, and he was sweating. Kassar was shocked to see his normal, cocky arrogance replaced by fear. Despite that fear, Kassar knew that he could not fully trust Jonah Arukan.
"This has to end, Titus," said Arukan. "You don't want to be a martyr, do you?"
"Martyr? That's a strange choice of words for someone who claims not to believe."
A small smile appeared on Arukan's face.
"I'm not as stupid as you think, Titus. You're a good man, and a damn good crewman. You believe in things, which is more than most people can manage. So I'd rather you didn't die."
Kassar didn't respond to Arukan's forced levity.
"Please. I know you're just saying that for the Princeps' benefit. I've no doubt he can hear every word."
"Probably yes. But he knows that as soon as he opens that door, you'll blow his head off. So I guess you and I can just say what we damn well like."
Kassar's grip on the gun relaxed.
"You're not in his pocket."
"Hey, we've been through some scary shit recently, haven't we?"
said Arukan.
"I know what you're going through."
Kassar shook his head.
"No, you don't. And I know what you're trying to do. I can't back down. I'm making a stand in the name of my emperor. I won't just surrender."
"Look, Titus, if you believe, then you believe. But you don't have to prove that to anyone."
"You think I'm doing this for show?"
asked Kassar, aiming his gun at Arukan's throat. Arukan held out his hands and walked carefully around the Princeps' command chair to stand across the bridge from him.
"The Emperor isn't just a figurehead to cling to," said Kassar. "He is a god. He has a saint and miracles, and I have seen them, and so have you. Think of all you have seen, and you'll realize you have to help me, Jonah."
"I saw some odd things, Titus, but—"
"Don't deny them," interrupted Kassar. "They happened, as sure as you and I are standing in this war machine. Jonah, there is an emperor, and he is watching over us. He judges us by the choices we make when those choices are hard. The War Master has betrayed us, and if I stand back and let it happen, then I am betraying my emperor. There are principles that must be defended, Arukan. Don't you even see that much? If none of us take a stand, then the War Master will win, and there won't even be the memory of this betrayal.
Arukan shook his head in frustration.
Kassar, if I could just make you see...
You're trying to tell me you haven't seen anything to believe in? Asked Kassar, turning away in disappointment.
He looked through the scorched panes of the viewing bay at the assembling Death Guard.
Titus, I haven't believed in anything for a long time, said Arukan. For that I'm truly sorry. And I'm sorry for this too.
Kassar turned to see that Jonah Arukan had drawn his pistol and had it aimed squarely at his chest.
Jonah, said Kassar, you would betray me. After all we have seen.
There's only one thing I want, Titus, and that's command of my own Titan. One day I want to be Princeps Arukan, and that's not going to happen if I let you do this.
Kassar said, To know that this whole galaxy is starved of belief, and to think that you might be the only one who believes, and yet to still believe in spite of all that, that is faith, Arukan. I wish that you could understand that.
It's too late for that, Titus, said Arukan. I'm sorry.
Arukan's gun barked three times, filling the bridge with bursts of light and noise. Tarvitz could see the battle from the shadow of an entrance arch leading into the Precentor's palace. He had escaped the cyclone of carnage that Angron had slaughtered into life to link up with his own warriors in the palace, but the sight of the World Eater's Primarch was still a vivid red horror in his mind. Tarvitz glanced back into the palace, its vaulted hallways strewn with the bodies of the dead palace guard, darkening as late afternoon turned the shadows long and dim. Soon it would be night.
Lucius,
voxed Tarvitz, static howling.
Lucius, come in.
Saul, what do you see?
Gunships and drop pods, too. Our colours, landing just north of here.
Has the Primarch blessed us with his presence?
Looks like Eidolon, said Tarvitz with relish.
The Vox was heavy with static, and he knew that the War Master's forces would be attempting to jam their Vox channels without blocking their own.
Listen, Lucius, Angron is going to break through here. The loyal World Eaters down there won't be able to hold him. He's going to head for the palace.
Then there will be a battle, deadpanned Lucius. I hope Angron makes it a good fight. I think I might have found a decent fencing opponent at last.
You're welcome to him. We need to make this stand count. Start barricading the central dome. We'll move to fortifying the main domes and junctions if Angron gives us that long.
Since when did you become the leader here? Asked Lucius petulantly. I was the one who killed Vardas Prahl.
Tarvitz felt his anger rise at his friend's childishness at such a volatile time, but bit back his anger to say,
Get in there and help man the barricades. We don't have long before we'll be in the thick of it.
The Thunderhawk sped away from the vengeful spirit, gathering speed as crews kicked in the afterburners. Mercedy felt unutterably light-headed to be off the War Master's ship at last, but the cold realization that they had nowhere to go sobered her as she saw glinting specks of the fleet all around them.
"Now what?"
asked Cruz.
"We're away, but where to next?"
"I told you we were not without friends, did I not, Yakton?"
said Euphrates, sitting in the co-pilot's chair beside the Astartes warrior. The warrior gave her a brief sideways look.
"Be that as it may, Remembrancer, friends do us little good if we die out here."
"But what a death it would be," said Keeler, with the trace of a ghostly smile.
Cinderman shared a worried glance with her, no doubt wondering if they had overreached themselves in trusting that Euphrates could deliver them to safety out in the dark of space. The old man looked tiny and feeble, and she took his hand in hers. Through the view shield, Mercedy could see a field of glittering lights, starships belonging to the 63rd expedition, and every one of them hostile. As if to contradict her, Euphrates pointed upwards through the view shield, towards the belly of an ugly vessel they would pass beneath if they continued on their current course. The weak sun of Istvan glinted from its unpainted gunmetal hull.
"Head towards that one," commanded Euphrates, and Mercedy was surprised to see Cruz turn the controls without a word of protest.
Mercedy didn't know a great deal about spacecraft, but she knew that the cruiser would be bristling with turrets that could pick up the Thunderhawk as it shot past, and could maybe even deploy fighters.
"Why are we getting closer?" she asked hurriedly. "Surely we want to head away."
Trust me, Sadie, said Euphrates. This is the way it has to be. At least it will be quick, she thought, as the vessel grew larger in the view shield.
It's Death Guard, said Cruz.
Mercedy bit her lip and glanced at Cinderman. The old man looked calm and said,
Quite the adventure, eh?
Mercedy smiled in spite of herself.
What are we going to do, Kirill?
Asked Mercedy, tears springing from her eyes.
What do we have left to us?
This is still our fight, Mercedy, said Euphrates,
turning from the view shield.
Sometimes that fight must be open warfare. Sometimes it must be fought with words and ideas. We all have our parts to play.
Mercedy let out a breath, unable and unwilling to believe that there were allies in the cruiser looming in front of them.
We are not alone, smiled Euphrates.
But this fight, it feels a lot bigger than me.
You are wrong. Each of us has as much right to have their say in the fate of the galaxy as the War Master. Believing that is how we will defeat him.
Mercedy nodded and watched the cruiser above them drawing ever nearer, its long, dark shape edged in starlight, and its engines wreathed in clouds of crystalline gases.
Thunderhawk gunship, identify yourself,
said a gruff, gravel-laden voice, crackling from the voxcaster.
Be truthful, warned Euphrates. All depends on it.
Cruz nodded and said,
My name is Yakton Cruz, formerly of the Sons of Horus.
Formerly?
Came the reply.
Yes, formerly,
said Cruz.
Explain yourself. I am no longer part of the Legion, said Cruz,
and Mercedy could hear the pain it caused him to give voice to these words.
I can no longer be party to what the War Master is doing.
After a long pause, the voice returned.
Then you are welcome on my ship, Yakton Cruz. And who are you?
Asked Cruz.
I am Captain Nathaniel Garrow of the Eisenstein.